Hey, everyone. If you're just joining us, I recommend going back to listen to part one of George Michael. We found out how a young Greek teenage boy from London became an international pop sensation almost overnight. And while his face was wallpapering the bedrooms of teenage girls, he was checking out the hot young guys in volleyball courts behind his sunglasses. And as he was conquering the music charts, he decided he needed to start a rebellion. The media and his label were not impressed, and some heavy hitters warned George to fall in line. But could the dulcet tones of Old Blue Eyes sway George's thinking? Well, let's find out. Welcome to A Life Lived. I'm Stephanie Okupniak. Apparently, after hearing George was refusing to promote his albums or feature himself, Frank Sinatra wrote him, saying, "God gave you a gift. Now go out and do the work." The letter was never authenticated, and George was convinced that it was written by a publicist trying to bait him. Whether it is real or not, George wasn't taking any advice from Old Blue Eyes. I can't imagine what George was going through. Never knowing who was your friend or who was manipulating you for their own gain, trying to figure out how to handle the alienation of celebrity while understanding it's necessary for your job, being under the magnifying glass of the press and your record label while trying to better understand your sexuality. I mean, no wonder he didn't want to do interviews. I'm shocked he got out of his room every day. While he was on tour in Rio, George noticed a fan in the crowd. In fact, he became so transfixed with him, he had to avoid performing on that side of the stage. Anselma Filippa and George fell madly in love. George said it was a challenge to be proud of your sexual identity when it never brought him any joy before.
You know, George was very low-key about stuff, so I didn't know after he met him that there was anything going on. Other than the fact that George went up and he called me, I was at another hotel and he said, "You need to come over straight away." And I said, "Why do I need to do that?" He said, "You just need to come over to my place right now." So I went over there and I was waiting on the couch and he said he's in the bathroom and he'd come right out. And he came out and he showed me that he had shaved his head. But I was sitting there and he walked out and I said, "Jesus." And he said, "I knew you'd hate it. I knew you'd hate it." So that was the beginning of when I thought I saw him with Anselmo for a minute at the hotel, but I still didn't think anything because Anselmo was there as a fan. So he invited Anselmo to the show, and that's the first time I realized that maybe, you know, they're connecting. And then I knew, obviously, that night. And then after the concerts, we went on vacation for a week to an island off the coast of Brazil. And he was with him the whole time. So that was the beginning of everybody knowing outwardly that he had a boyfriend. They were definitely in love. No question about it. Not even a question. Totally. He was totally different. I mean, his behavior was, you know, when Anselmo was around, he seemed to be always happy. And it was just it was a wonderful time for my family because they got to see him interact with somebody that he loved and that I had little kids and he was just always, you know, holding them around them. It was amazing when they were together.
After George met Anselmo, he finally felt like a grown-up. Their romance bloomed under the worst of circumstances. It was such a scary time to be a gay man. HIV and AIDS was the headline news around the world. People didn't know what it was, who it affected, and if it could be cured. They just knew that if you were diagnosed with it, it was essentially a death sentence.
It being the 80s, literally as the tour was getting underway, there were covers on Time and Newsweek on the AIDS epidemic. and the gay disease. So George had to confront that situation and the stigma that was involved with the AIDS crisis that was unfolding around the world. And this is when we're expecting George to come out and be comfortable about it. So there was that emotional turmoil. And I'll tell you something, there was one time when we were performing in Pennsylvania, and I remember this vividly. So we're out in the suburbs, and you know, George is a European and George is a Greek. I mean, in Europe, they're all wearing Speedos to the beach. And George was always in his black Speedos. And we're at the pool with his management, and I'm there, and some of his team are there. And there was this lady with her child, maybe 5, 6 years old, and the kid was in the pool. And we're sitting at the other end of the pool, and George jumps in the water. And suddenly, the lady jumps out of her chair, grabs the child out of the pool, and says, "You got to get out of this pool. We don't want you catching AIDS." And we could hear her say this at the other end of the pool. She was so loud. And she's making this assumption because there are a bunch of men in Speedos in the pool. And it was a shocking reminder of the time that we were going through. And for George, what he was going through in terms of balancing this who he was against what was going on and what the political climate of the time was in America and around the world. And we were all aghast that, you know, when we heard this, but that was reality. And that was pressing on him every day. In hindsight, we realized that.
Anselmo grew sick, and no one could understand what was happening to him. His doctors advised him to get tested. He was in Brazil, and George was with his family in England when Anselmo got the results. He was positive for AIDS. George couldn't share his grief with his family because he still hadn't come out of the closet to them, or to the public. At the same time, Freddie Mercury died from AIDS. George was devastated, but he responded the only way he knew how, through music. George sang Freddie's music at a tribute concert, but he also left on that stage all of the grief he had for an icon, all of his fear for the love of his life, and all of the anger and uncertainty of his sexuality. George was signing autographs when he found out Anselmo passed away in Brazil. He described the 4 years between Anselmo's diagnosis and his death as torture. He was sick of boxing up his emotions, and he took a long, hard look at how he was managing his life. And he realized he wasn't managing it at all. His record label was. He had no control of his image, his music, his work. He couldn't be honest with himself under those expectations and restrictions. George asked a high court judge to consider his contract with Sony Music as null and void. Every day before court, George would vigorously run to try and vent his anger and fear before presenting himself.
He kind of lost a little bit of that spark after the Faith album. You know, just going through changes personally. And after the Faith album, everything was a little bit more difficult. So it was very stressful, and it was a horrible time. And the sad part of it is that I had worked out with David Geffen a way for him to move off the label. But, you know, he was on a crusade to prove that artists aren't, you know, shouldn't be signed for, you know, 50 years or whatever the amount of time would have been that we were signed to Sony. And I think it changed everything for the music business in the future, because people are signed for much shorter terms now. But, you know, it was very frustrating.
He was fighting for his music. He was fighting for the rights of musicians and for the long history of corruption within the music industry. He lost the case. George swore never to make music for Sony ever again. David Geffen from Virgin decided he couldn't let talent like George flounder, and so he called Sony and asked them to release him. They bought his contract, and George finally felt free. Even Prince saluted George's battle and paid him tribute. Now we're going to take a little break to pay tribute to our sponsor. When we come back, we'll find out how George teamed up with Princess Diana to give a little back. We're sponsored this week by Wild, a natural deodorant company that focuses on performance, sustainability, and style. Now, I've been doing a lot of research about the nasties that you find in regular high street deodorants. But all the natural deodorants that I've tried, well, they're not effective. I mean, pit stains are humiliating. Not to mention the fact that you still get a bit of your own musk, if you will. And nobody likes the yellow marks that are left behind on your shirts. I mean, I don't know about you, but I can never get them out. That's why I've been so thrilled by Wild. It keeps me dry and smelling so fresh all day long. It doesn't contain any aluminum and parabens, and it's also vegan, cruelty-free, and eco-friendly. With Wild, you get this funky reusable applicator that comes in a range of cool colors. I'm currently rocking the purple, my fave. And the deodorant refills are 100% biodegradable, recyclable, and plastic-free. I mean, no guilt, people. You can smell fresh and be free. I love the orange zest scent, and my husband's using the mint fresh fragrance. The great thing is that all five are totally unisex. You can get started with Wild from just 12 pounds and select a subscription plan to suit your lifestyle with refills delivered right to your door. So go wild today and get yourself this natural refillable deodorant that genuinely works, people. Just head to wearewild.com and you'll get 20% off your first order and free delivery when you use LIVED at checkout. That's wearewild.com and offer LIVED at checkout for 20% off. Wild. Deodorant redefined. After the case and the death of his love, George needed a break. He went on a hiatus for a few years. During that time, he tried to enjoy the simple things.
He loved driving with the top down, and I had a car for him at the house. So when he came, he would drive the convertible Mercedes. He loved that. He loved the sun. I mean, he loved music. He loved listening to other artists. He loved swimming. I mean, he loved creating, you know. I mean, that's what he was great at.
His creative nature caught up with him, and he wrote a song in memory of Anselmo, Jesus to a Child. A week later, he played it in front of the Brandenburg Gate in Berlin, paying tribute to the first love of his life in front of thousands of adoring fans and the record company who snubbed him. The album Older took longer to assemble. Before the court case and the hiatus, George was writing and performing 24/7. But now, he was translating his bereavement and experience into music. And, in his own admission, he was stoned a lot. And then one day, George met Kenny Goss. They were at the same spa, and Kenny didn't know who George was, and George didn't know if Kenny was gay. After a few dates, it was clear they were meant to be. George started being open about his sexuality in public and didn't hide his relationship. He held hands with Kenny in restaurants, and George finally felt the freedom of loving in public. George came out to his family, and it turned out okay. They still loved their boy and were proud of who he was. Shortly after he met Kenny, he found out his mother had cancer and passed away. It was tragic for George. He recoiled, missing award shows and sheltering from the public. Kenny and George were together for 13 years before it ended in 2009. Shortly after, George began a relationship with celebrity hairstylist Fadi Fawaz, and they stayed together until the end. George wasn't perfect and never pretended to be, but he didn't sink all of his emotions into his vices and his music. He also found joy and meaning in charity work, and he dedicated a lot of time and money into helping others any way he could. George's manager, Rob Kahane, said those were some of the happiest times.
He and my wife had a very close relationship because she was with him probably a lot more than I was because he was at the house while I was at work. And, you know, he would participate in like running to the grocery store or going to pick the kids up at school or whatever. So those were the great times and the good parts of things. So super helpful, super generous, amazingly generous. And he said my wife was working with a big charity. She helped found the Missing Children's Organization, and they were raising money for missing children to find them. And George said, why don't I do a couple of concerts to raise money for it? And, you know, we'll do it down here and da da da. So we made it part of the tour. And in two nights, they raised over $1 million for the Missing Children's Organization. And it was just one of those things that he just did like nonchalantly, you know, it was amazing. He would tell me after the fact, but I know that I forgot what it was like 5 million pounds or 10 million pounds that he gave to one of the hospitals there for a wing on the hospital to deal with AIDS. But he never wanted people to know he did it. You know what I'm saying? And we did a show for Princess Diana that I put together with George to raise awareness. It was at Wembley Arena. But yeah, it was fantastic because, you know, Princess Diana was there and it was obviously raising money for AIDS. We did the same thing for the Freddie Mercury thing. We did a bunch of things.
The next time George would make headlines was after his arrest for soliciting an undercover officer in a men's public bathroom in a park in Hollywood. George was open about his sexuality in his local community, but he never made a public announcement. Being arrested for sex with a male police officer was the most embarrassing way to be outed.
Beverly Hills police officers arrested the singer known as George Michaels. Mr. Michaels was arrested for a violation of 647A of the Penal Code, engaging in a lewd act.
His audience was now torn between enjoying his music and whether or not it was politically correct to enjoy his music. The press ate up the scandal like it was a last meal. He knew his private life and his work were going to have a head-on collision sooner rather than later. He felt he was slowly going insane. However, George decided to respond not just with a hit single, but with a chorus line of kissing police officers in the music video. The tabloid papers threw homophobic headlines and accusations at George. Before, George felt the way to handle media was to hide from them, but this time he felt the way forward was honesty. He was interviewed on The Parkinson Show in 1998 and won the hearts of his adoring fans all over again. He responded to the humiliation and the exposure with wit and showed he could still be a success, selling over 2 million records with his album Songs of the Last Century. George treated the album as an artistic exercise. He wanted to pay tribute to these amazing songs and artists, as well as exercise his voice and inspiration. George may have come clean, but all the support he had was gone. He was still the running joke, and most of the people who helped him hide his sexuality didn't know what to do with him now that he was out. George's album Patience was his response to the world in turmoil. 9/11, the war in the Middle East, George Bush's presidency, and Rupert Murdoch's media monopoly. His attempt at a political album was the cement boots that anchored his career. Americans felt insulted by their musical love. Alliances between the music industry and those George insulted meant that a brilliant album had no traction. But George learned his lesson. And instead of taking the beating from the press, he got stuck in. He promoted the heck out of Patience. He went to record stores signing albums. He decided to embrace modern media and compromise. In his late 40s, George finally became comfortable with his identity. He wrote the song Heal the Pain as a tribute to Paul McCartney and the Beatles, and then ended up singing it as a duet with Paul McCartney. At Live 8 in 2005, they joined forces singing Baby, You Can Drive My Car. George worked with an incredible lineup of icons. Mary J. Blige, Elton John, Stevie Wonder, Queen, Whitney Houston, Aretha Franklin, Tony Bennett. He elevated music in a way that celebrated music heritage and brought it back to popular mainstream audiences. He had triumphs, setbacks, and comebacks throughout his career, but he never gave up. He toured, he made TV appearances on American Idol, and even had a small role in the TV show Eli Stone. He was able to take the piss out of himself with comedy sketches about his past indiscretions with James Corden and Ricky Gervais. He was always a romantic. As a gift to Prince William and Kate Middleton, he released a cover of Stevie Wonder's hit, You and I. We never stopped loving George, and George never gave up on us. His performance at the 2012 Olympic Games was a tribute to victory over adversity. On Christmas Day, 2016, we found out that George Michael had died.
I was literally shocked because I was here at my home in Puerto Vallarta, Mexico on Christmas Day when I heard the news on all the media outlets, but everybody started texting me, all my friends, and because everybody knew that I started my career with George Michael. And it really, I looked at it as almost bookends to my career because, you know, here it was George that started my career, really, my first big client 30 some odd years ago. And here now he's passed away, and it puts your own life into perspective.
I was with my kids, all three girls, on Christmas. And I was with Gavin Rosdale, who's the lead singer of Bush, because he was a client, and we were celebrating Christmas together, and it was probably about noon our time, and my oldest daughter was upstairs, who kind of grew up with George, and I heard her scream, like, you know, something had bat. You can tell the difference in a scream, you know, one's like, and this was a deep scream, and I ran upstairs to find out what was wrong, and she's crying, and she just held her phone to me, showing that George had died. And that's how we all found out.
The great thing about an artist like George Michael is that no matter what his personal life, his music was timeless and his message is timeless, and that will live on forever. Music is the soundtrack to people's lives, and the words and music and songs that George Michael has left the world will live on forever. I would describe George Michael to any young person as one of the most prolific and talented singers, songwriters, producers, and musicians of our age and of all ages.
The legacy that he's left behind is one of the greatest pop singers of the last 50 years. His voice, whether it was with Queen or Elton John or solo, it's so amazing that talent was never questioned.
George Michael was asked what his legacy is. He said he wanted to be remembered as a great songwriter and one of the last big stars in a glamorous era of music history when they were few and far between. Overall, he just wanted to be remembered as a man of integrity. Phil LaBelle was the publicist for George Michael during the Faith album tour. Rob Kahane is an entertainment executive and George Michael's former manager. Next on A Life Lived.
A fight ensued between two people in the club. It got that kerosene fire that was keeping the place warm tipped over. It ignited the flames all throughout the club. Everybody scurried out, including BB. He realized when he got out that he left his guitar in there. He went back in to get the guitar, which was kind of a foolish thing to do, which he admitted many times. And he got the guitar and left. After it was over, he understood that the two guys were fighting over a woman by the name of Lucille. And from that day forward, that was the story of the naming of Lucille.
You cannot tell the history of America without hearing the gentle strumming of Lucille in the lap of B.B. King. We spoke with his daughter, Shirley, and some of his closest friends to find out how a boy born in a cotton field could grow to become the King of Blues. This is an Audioboom original production by Muddy Knees Media and Breaking Stereotypes. This podcast was presented and executive produced by me, Stephanie Okupniak. Our series editor has been Lucy Oliva. If there is an icon that you would like to know more about, you can find us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram using the handle @alifelived_.